The problem with how Brother Rick closed is I will probably get accused from here on out and henceforth and evermore of being the caboose. So sometimes illustrations have a way of outliving the sermon. I very much appreciate that which has come before, and very much rejoice in the preaching that we've heard this evening. I'll not stand before you long, but want to bring a couple of thoughts to your mind in regard to the things that we've already heard. Just right off the bat, it's just a funny observation of mine. One of the things that I get told on a regular basis as a minister is I get told that, well, if I saw what they saw, I would believe. Another one is, well, if the Lord spoke to me, I'd listen. What I've always found interesting is the things that they bring up. Well, if I saw what they saw, like if I saw the Red Sea part and I walked through it, you know, just another chapter later, chapter and a half after they walked through the Red Sea, they were doubting God after they had just come through the sea. And here in Acts 10 is a man who God spoke to. And what did the man do? Nope. No, Lord. Not going to do it. I tell you, I've heard a lot of people call Peter a coward. That takes a lot of brass to stand there and tell the Lord no when He speaks audibly to you. And yet here is a man who God speaks to and he says, no, Lord, I'm not going to do it. And the Lord's very merciful with him. The Lord tells him three times and then He shows him through, after the vision, through these Gentile men, what Peter was supposed to do, and he was very faithful to that. So I wanted to make that observation, but looking at how the Lord has worked on both ends of this, Brother Rick made a very fine point when he said that is how the gospel in its function has to operate. It happened a few chapters later when Paul went to Philippi, and he ended up down by the waterside, down where there were some women, and one of them's name was Lydia, who was a seller of purple, and it says that her heart was one that the Lord had opened. And she attended unto those things which were spoken of Paul. You know, the only reason Paul was there is because the Lord told him to go there. He had determined, as Acts 16 opens, to perhaps go over here. And the Spirit said, nope, not over there. Okay, well, maybe I'll go over here. No, you're not going to go over there. And then in a vision by night, he sees a man of Macedonia saying, come over unto us and help us. So he gets on a boat. He goes over there. But you know, he doesn't find a welcoming committee. He doesn't find a bunch of people saying, we've been waiting for you, Paul. We're waiting for you. He just ends up at the hour of prayer, going down to the waterside where there's some women there. Doesn't really sound like much of a beginnings of a church. Doesn't sound a whole lot like the Lord is in this matter. I mean, he didn't find a reception. He didn't find people who were waiting for him. Not even in Peter's case, did he have anybody who, like in Cornelius' case, had actual men send and tell him, come over here with us. He just saw a vision, a man saying, come over there. But what Paul did find is when he started speaking, he found a woman named Lydia, whose heart the Lord had opened. The Lord had worked on her prior to Paul being there. He worked on Paul to get Paul there. And once Paul was there, notice what happened. The success of this region started with Lydia. Started with her, went to her house, and to some of the people of that community. But before it's all said and done, Paul ends up and Silas end up in a Philippian jail. And in the middle of that jail, they end up with another convert, a jailer, and all of his house. So the beginnings of this church was a woman, probably not a whole lot thought of her, much made of her in the community. She certainly wasn't a mover and a shaker, who the Lord had prepared, a jailer, who the Lord gave Paul an avenue with him. And this is the beginning of the church at Philippi, who of all the letters Paul wrote to all the churches in the New Testament, you look at the book of Philippians, there was probably no greater, more tender relationship between a pastor and a church than the church at Philippi. He tells them, you are my joy and my crown. He said, you are the church that I just am endeared to. Not to say that he didn't love all the rest, but that he didn't give him the headaches that some of the other ones did. And that blessed situation came from very humble beginnings, but it came by the Lord working before Paul got there and then working on Paul to get him there. How did that happen? How did the Lord arrange it that way? Brother Rick made comment from Romans 1 and 16 Just for a few minutes tonight, I'd like to take you one verse below that. Paul, in his discussion in the opening of the book of Romans, is setting a treatise before them that this is what the rest of this book is going to be based off of. And he begins in verse 14 by saying that I'm a debtor to the Jews, to the Greeks. I'm a debtor to the barbarians, to the wise, the unwise. He says in verse 15, so as much as in me is, I'm ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. Verse 16 that Brother Rick quoted, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is, I love that it is, not it will become, not it will be once it's done. It is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. But notice verse 17, for therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. What is it that the gospel is bringing forth? What is it the gospel is bringing to light? It is revealing the righteousness of God Himself. How does that come? It comes by giving us the testimony of who Christ is, who is the express image of God, what Christ has done, which is the will of His Father, what Christ has accomplished, which is what His Father gave Him to do, and what Christ currently does and where Christ currently is. This is a revelation of the righteousness of God. It's revealed through the gospel. I realize that you could look behind me right now and you could see the beauty of God's creation. You could see trees. You could see sky. You can see the wonders of the natural world that He set in place. But none of those natural things holds a candle to the glory and the presence and the majesty of Jesus Christ, His person and what He's done. That revelation is not something you'll walk out through the forest and get. That kind of revelation is not the one that you're just going to walk to Walmart and pick up off the shelf along with your toilet paper and your milk and your bread. Now, people listening to this sermon about 10 years from now may not know what that reference means, but you all know what I mean by that. You're not going to pick up this revelation in Walmart next to the toilet paper. You're not going to go down to your local hardware store, your local gas station, and get a fill-up of God's righteousness. It doesn't come that way. But in the gospel, we have a revelation of who God is, what He's done, through the person of His Son, Jesus Christ. And the righteousness of God is revealed how? It's revealed from faith to faith. Brother Rick made a comment that as Cornelius was a devout man, one who feared God, one who gave alms, and one who prayed always, that is a man who is showing forth by those works, by those actions, that he has faith. What does he have faith in? Can't be the Word of God. He's never seen it. He's a Gentile. It can't be the gospel. He's not heard it yet. Can't be Jesus Christ. He probably doesn't know that name yet and what it really means. He's a Roman centurion. Now, he may have heard of the person Jesus, but he hadn't heard what Peter's going to deliver to him about how Jesus was crucified and rose again the third day. He'd never heard that. So what was his faith? Where did it come from? It came because God gave it to him. And God gave it to him, and he is exercising what God had put in, and doing so by alms and prayers and fearing God. Peter had faith because it took faith for a Jewish man to go and preach to some Gentile dogs. It took faith on both ends. What else did it take? It took the God of all faith and faithfulness giving them the faith to be in attendance and to be present. When it says that the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, Brother Rick said he's heard any number of explanations on what it meant that the Lord didn't receive Cain's offering and received Abel's offering. I've heard a dozen explanations from a dozen different guys on what from faith to faith means. Some think it means from God's faith to man's faith. Some think it means from the preacher's faith to the congregation's faith. Some think it takes the faith that is inbound in us by God's grace with the faith once delivered to the saints and the Word of God. Some think it's from faith to faith, from one believer to another. I've heard any number of these explanations. You know what the answer is? The answer is yes. That's the answer. It must take God as the God of faith to man in channeling and giving that faith for this to work. It must take a man who has faith delivering, using the faith once delivered to the saints for it to be effective. It must take a man standing here with that message to people whose hearts God has opened to attend unto those things, who have faith that it can receive it. It must take, friends, us as we have fellowship with one another, interacting with one another, building one another up. It must take faith between us
for these things to be. Because whenever you think about the righteousness of God being revealed, it's not just coming through God's revelation to His Son, to us, His people here on earth. It comes, friends, through learning more about Him. It comes through seeing more about Him. You will see the righteousness of God in the person of Jesus Christ in the face, I hope, of the man delivering the message, if he's delivering the message of Jesus Christ and Him crucified. You will see the message in the face of your brethren as their feet follow after righteousness and peace and godliness. You'll see Christ in you, the hope of glory, coming out and bearing forth that kind of fruit. You will see in men like Cornelius who rejoice in the gospel of Jesus Christ that Peter's so taken aback that he says, "Who can forbid water?" He turns to the six brethren and he says, "Did you see what I see? I mean, can you not tell that Jesus Christ is in them of a truth? How can we not baptize them?" And friends, one of the greatest declarations of the righteousness of God being revealed from faith to faith, it doesn't just come during the times of the gospel being declared. It comes, friends, during the times of the gospel being lived. It comes when the gospel is seen, not just in the steps of the man bringing it, but it's seen in the steps of those who have received it and living it. One of the greatest sermons that has ever been preached will not come from my mouth. It'll come from our feet as people see our good works. And what do they see when they see our good works? They see the righteousness of God revealed in our steps and in our walk. Remember the story Brother Rick started with about what they saw, what the heathen saw in Christian people and how effective and how powerful it was? He mentioned that the situation we're in today may not be exactly the same, and it may not be. But there is a... I guess I beat up folks at work so much, I beat up the government so much since I work for the government, I guess you're actually going to get... may actually say something good about it. You know, at work, we have a certain program that we live by. It's called AOP. Not that you need to know that, nor do you even really need to know what AOP stands for. It stands for Art of the Possible, if you care. But the whole point of AOP is what they call looking for opportunities. And when you have opportunities, many times those opportunities stem from where your shortcomings are. Like maybe your production is down over here, maybe you're in the red over there. There is an opportunity to do something better. You know what the gospel does for us? It highlights for us where we're in the red. It highlights for us where we're lagging. And it gives us the ingredients and the tools to show forth how we can come up in those things. What it further does is when we come up in those things, someone says, "You know, there's something different about you. There's something that I had never seen before." You then have the opportunity to tell how great things Jesus Christ has done for you. Imagine that man who had the legion of devils in him, and the Lord told him, "Go home to thy friends and show how great things the Lord had done for you." Don't you imagine when he walked through the street that there are people going, "Woo! He's back! He's walking down the street! Lock the doors! Come on, y'all." This man was a wild man. He lived in cemeteries. When they tried to chain him up, he broke the chains. You see him walking down the street. You know what I'm going to do? Lock the door and get the gun. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. That's what I'm going to do. But all of a sudden, there's something different about it. He's no longer a wild man. He's no longer crazy. He's in his right mind. And all of a sudden, people start peeking out. And they say, "Hey, you're a little different." What did he say? "There's a man back there named Jesus. And he had mercy on me. And all he told me to do was to come tell all of you how great things he's done for me." You know, the message of the gospel is painfully simple. All we have to do when somebody says, "What's different? You look different. You sound different. You act different." Friends, we should. We should look different, sound different, and act different than all that is going on in this world right now. You know, right now the world's cast down. We should be rejoicing. Not rejoicing in what's going on, but rejoicing in the Lord in spite of what's going on. The world is in fear. We shouldn't be in fear because our God is still on His throne. The world is full of turmoil and chaos. We should be at peace. And the reason we should be at peace is because we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. If somebody sees in us that we're different, you know what that is?
That's the opportunity the gospel has given unto us to show how great and things God has done for us. It's not hard. It's just simply this. There was a man who once was alive and then died, is now alive again. And he is my friend. He's my king. He's my husband. He's my elder brother. And he is on his throne right now. And while he is on my side, as he will be forevermore, I'll not be afraid, because I have the best friend that somebody could ever have that can take care of whatever it is that I have to go through. That's the heart of the gospel. Who he is, where he is, and what he's doing. There's the heart of it right there. May people see in us the righteousness of God revealed in our faith. Not just while we're here, but while we're out there. Not just when we're with one another, but when we're with others out there. I don't know who I bump into, whose heart the Lord may have opened, that I have an opportunity to talk to that person. May it be our course to walk faithfully all the days of our life, and in so doing, may the Lord in His providence give us the opportunity to reveal His Son to others through the way that we live, the way that we act, the way that we talk. And you say, well, preacher, I just don't know if I have the right words. Let me give you three that you can remember. When you don't know what else to say, you can always say, come and see. Come and see the place where my Master dwells. Come and see the place where my Master's friends dwell. Come and see where I have found this peace, this rest, and this consolation. And so doing, may we be a light for others as well. I'm not sure if this qualifies as the caboose to Brother Rick's sermon, but if it is, I'll be very happy to be the caboose tonight and hope that these things have been a blessing unto you. If they have, you give God all the praise, honor, and glory. May the Lord bless you is my prayer.